Hello, my name's Florence. Welcome to the Obs Pod. I'm an NHS obstetrician, hoping to share some thoughts and experiences about my working life. Perhaps you enjoy Call the Midwife, maybe birth fascinates you, or you're simply curious about what exactly an obstetrician is. You might be pregnant and preparing for birth. Perhaps you work in maternity and want to know what makes your obstetric colleagues tick, or you want some fresh ideas and inspiration. Whichever of these is the case, and for that matter, anyone else that's interested, the Obs Pod is for you. Episode 11. Caesarean. So after the success of last week's episode about home birth, I thought I would contrast things and talk this week a bit about caesarean birth. So over the course of my career, I've changed quite a lot about how I do a caesarean. And I know that lots of other obstetricians are experimenting with caesareans too. And there's been quite a lot written or videos you can find online about a so-called natural caesarean. Well, in my mind, there isn't anything natural about a caesarean. It is a surgical procedure. It is an operation. But for some women, this is the right choice of birth, either because of complications and medical reasons, or because for them, for mental health reasons or other practical reasons, a caesarean is the right choice. And for me, it's important, whatever birth a woman has, that it is as positive as it possibly can be. So when I started my career, the kind of process for an average caesarean would be the woman would come into theatre and have a spinal anaesthetic. So that's numbed from the breasts downwards with an injection in her back of local anaesthetic. And when I started out, her partner would actually sit outside the theatre and would be called in once the spinal was already in, so that the anaesthetist and the theatre team were with the woman, but the partner wasn't. So the woman was on her own, having a spinal. Then she would have a catheter put in her bladder. The partner would be invited in. And then we would perform the caesarean. And the typical thing to do when we performed the caesarean was, once the baby came out, was to lift the baby up. So we cover the woman in a sterile drape to keep our surgical operating field clean. And so we would lift the baby up. And some people have nicknamed this the Lion King or Simba pose, where you hold the baby up. The baby's held up for everyone in the theatre to see. The parents can see. And then we put the baby down, cut and clamp the cord, and give the baby to the midwife. And this is traditionally called taking the baby. So you'll hear midwives talking on the labour ward about who's taking the baby in theatre. And they will take the baby to the resuscitaire, the machine that we have to look after newborn babies. They will do a full top-to-toe newborn check, weigh the baby, and then usually swaddle the baby. So wrap it up nice and tight in a towel or a blanket, swaddle the baby, pop a hat on, often dress the baby, and hand to the birth partner, because the woman's having surgery and she may not feel up to holding her baby. So that's kind of how a caesarean was when I started my career. And as you know, in my births, in my motherhood part two episode, I had two emergency caesarean sections, and I didn't get to hold either of my daughters in the operating theatre. they were given to my husband. And in the first case, I wouldn't have wanted to hold her. But in the second case, I don't remember that being an option. And they were certainly dressed and given to my husband. So about 5 or 6 years ago, when I started becoming a bit more involved in improving women's experience of maternity care, I was newly on Twitter. And through Twitter, I saw the amazing Jenny the M. So some of you may know, Jenny is a midwife. She's actually retired now. And she was trying to pioneer skin to skin. So that is the baby being put skin to skin with its mother immediately after birth, skin to skin in theatre. And I won't go into what Jenny did because that's her own story. But safe to say, look her up, Jenny the M, skin to skin. It's an amazing story how she rebelled and made the change in her hospital. So I saw Jenny on Twitter talking about skin to skin in the operating theatre. And I thought I could do this too. I suddenly realised that actually, why wasn't that happening? Why were we swaddling babies? And why weren't they having skin to skin with their mothers in the operating theatre? So I started very small. I started experimenting. I discovered that to facilitate skin to skin, we needed to put the ECG monitoring dots that women need to have on them on their back rather than on their chest. And also that they needed one arm out of their gown, that their gown needed to be loose so that it was easy to get the baby in under the gown. And so with the cooperation of my anaesthetic colleagues and my midwifery colleagues, I started to sometimes manage to get skin to skin in theatre. And this was further helped by some posters that actually were produced by Jenny the M and Norwich Midwife, and published by NHS England. And because I was involved in MatEx and trying to promote good practice, I got some of these posters and laminated them and got them put up on the walls in our operating theatres. And around the same time, also our unit was starting to think about starting to get UNICEF baby friendly accreditation. And skin to skin is an important component of that, helping bonding, helping feeding. And so we were starting to encourage skin to skin through that. And when I was starting out, I found that the most important people to get on board with this were actually the women. So I started to tell women in my antenatal clinic that skin to skin was possible in theatre and that they could ask for it. And when women asked me about it, I told them, yes, it was possible. And that if someone told them it wasn't possible, they could say, well, Florence told me that it was possible. So gradually over time, we started to do more and more skin to skin in theatre. The scrub team became used to it. The midwives became used to it. The anaesthetist became used to it. And now it's become the norm. So we offer everyone skin to skin in theatre. And I say offer because it's important to remember that this is still a choice. Some women don't like it. Some women are a bit squeamish. Some want their baby cleaned, want their baby wrapped. Some women find it difficult to see their baby if their baby is across their chest, skin to skin. So there are a number of reasons why some women don't want skin to skin, and that's fine too. So we offer it. Optimal cord clamping was sort of the same. So there was a change in RCOG guidance a few years ago, but a change in guidance doesn't necessarily mean implementation. So I just decided to start. I'd heard that in some other hospitals they were doing delayed cord clamping, or now known as optimal cord clamping, at caesarean. So this is where you don't immediately clamp and cut the umbilical cord. And this is important because quite a lot of the baby's circulating blood volume is in the umbilical cord and in the placenta. So if you clamp and cut the umbilical cord as soon as the baby is born, then the baby has a much lower amount of blood volume that can affect the birth weight, but also the baby's iron stores and blood count. So there's been quite a lot of evidence suggesting that waiting for white, or waiting for the blood to empty out of the cord, is beneficial for babies. But doing this at caesarean comes with practical issues. So I started the practice and I got quite a bit of criticism from some of my obstetric colleagues and anaesthetic colleagues about blood loss and safety. Because while the baby is out and the cord is attached, and the placenta is still in the womb is open. And because the womb is open where you've made your incision, the womb is potentially bleeding. So waiting for white can take quite a few minutes. And if the woman is bleeding from the womb during that time, that is potentially detrimental to her health. So we slightly randomly chose a minute as standard, that we would wait at least a minute before clamping and cutting the umbilical cord at caesarean. And I also thought about how while we were waiting, we could clamp the walls of the womb, clamp the blood vessels that might be bleeding to prevent excessive blood loss. And I started to do this and teach our junior doctors to do this. And we discovered that if we wait a minute or two before we clamp and cut the umbilical cord, that actually in that time, that also allows the placenta, the afterbirth, to separate off the wall of the womb. So rather than starting pulling on it and or putting our hands into the womb to remove the placenta, if we're doing our delayed clamping and waiting, often the placenta will separate. And this has benefits for women. There are less complications and infections of the lining of the womb if you don't remove the placenta manually, but you wait for it to separate properly itself. So we found some benefits for the mum as well. And once again, this has become pretty standard. We're still having a few discussions with paediatricians. The paediatricians have some reservations because they feel that there's an increase in babies with jaundice. And there is some evidence that supports that. But overall, the benefits outweigh the negatives. So again, that's a choice we offer women. And we do suggest that we should delay clamping the cord, if at all possible, at caesarean. So I was on a bit of a gradual journey doing these couple of things. And sometimes you have a moment where someone comes along and changes your practice. So in clinic, I met a woman who unfortunately had placenta previa. So this is where the placenta is covering the neck of the womb. So it's not possible to have a vaginal birth, and the woman is at significant risk of hemorrhage, bleeding, excessive bleeding. So I met her in clinic, and she had already had one baby, and she'd had a home birth for that baby. And now she was facing having a caesarean, not something she ever would have chosen, but something that was medically essential for her well-being and that of her baby. And we started to talk in clinic about how could I make caesarean a positive experience for her. And when someone comes along and challenges you, you start to think about what you do and why you do it. So she asked me if it was possible to have her baby straight to her. When a woman has a uncomplicated birth, we usually lift the baby up straight onto her tummy or chest for skin to skin and for her to cuddle her baby and meet her baby. So the baby comes straight onto the mum. And when we do a vaginal assisted birth, we do exactly the same thing. So as soon as the baby's out, the baby goes straight onto the mum with the cord intact. When she asked me about, was it possible to do that at cesarean or was it possible to do a natural cesarean? I thought about it and I thought, why don't we do that? Why do we take the baby away? Why do we not give the baby straight to the mum in exactly the same way as we do with every other sort of delivery? And one of the difficulties is doing it in a sterile way. So you don't want to desterilise your surgical field. You don't want to get bacteria into the woman's incision and give her complications. So you've got to think about how you do it carefully. But actually, why wouldn't you give the baby straight to her? I also start to think about this because I quite often look after other members of hospital staff. And at a similar time, I had a nurse from another bit of the hospital who was pregnant and under my care and was going to need a cesarean. This was her first baby. And she said, I don't understand, Florence. People are offering to take my baby. What are they talking about? Where are they taking it? And why are they offering to take my baby as if this is a good thing, as if they're doing something special for me? And I had to explain to her that what they meant was they would be the midwife in theatre and they would be there supporting her and her baby at that moment of birth. But I started to realise she was right. It sounds really strange taking the baby, and actually, why should the midwife be the first person that takes and holds the baby and takes it to the resuscitator and checks it and so on? So I started to think about how I could give the baby straight to the woman. And normally the midwife stands towards the feet of the woman and holds a sterile towel, and then we put the baby into the sterile towel, and then she takes the baby and dries it off and wraps it up and brings it round to the mother. So the first thing I did was bring the midwife to the top, to the head and chest of the mother. But this causes difficulties because the anaesthetist needs to be by the mother's head, caring for her and looking after her. So you need help from your anaesthetic colleagues. So the midwife took the sterile towel and stood at the top end. And we dropped the screen and passed the baby over. And that didn't work terribly well because the sterile sheet the midwife has was not really very good at drying the baby, and we'd end up with blood and amniotic fluid and mess all over the woman and all over the gown. So when you try different things, you have to try a variety of different approaches. Eventually, with a bit of trial and error with one of my anaesthetic colleagues and one of my midwifery colleagues, we worked out actually what we need to do is put a warm towel, normal type of towel, from the resuscitator across the woman's chest. Then get the midwife to put on sterile gloves. And then I could pass the baby over the drape to the midwife in sterile gloves. And she can pop the baby down onto the towel, dry it and put it straight onto the woman's chest. And although this sounds very straightforward, trust me, it isn't. But what's the worst that can happen? Sometimes the woman reaches out and touches me and touches the baby. So I've learned that I have to tell the woman not to reach out till the midwife's got hold of the baby, because I have that desterilizes me. But I just change gloves. So if the midwife or the woman touches me inadvertently with something non-sterile, I just change gloves, and I haven't really noticed an increase in infections as a result. I pass the baby over with the umbilical cord intact. Sometimes the cord's a bit short and it's just not possible. And sometimes if the cord's a little bit short, you can manage it, but the baby's got to be with its back towards its mum, with its belly button and cord still towards me and her abdomen. So you just have to be a bit careful how you rotate the baby and how you handle the baby, that you don't pull on it too much if the cord is a little bit short. So we've done quite a lot of trial and error. And with the particular woman that challenged me, I managed to do the cesarean. And I was a little bit worried about it because of placenta previa, there's a bigger risk of bleeding. So I could pass her the baby. I then clamp the womb, clamp the uterus, so that I'm preventing bleeding while I'm waiting for that separation of the placenta and the cord is intact. And then actually sometimes if the placenta is delivered, I can pass the whole placenta, cord and everything over to my midwifery colleague, and the dad can cut the umbilical cord. And I can tell you, some of the midwives love doing this. Some of the midwives are like, oh no, we're not doing this, are we? One of my anaesthetic colleagues calls this the Florence special. And I started doing it for this woman in particular, and it's a couple of years ago now. And now this is my routine way of doing a cesarean. So the woman comes into theatre, the partner now comes in with her for the spinal. Then when she has the baby, I pass the baby to her. She's got the baby skin to skin with the cord intact. And sometimes the dad can cut the cord. Sometimes the placenta doesn't separate and I have to cut the cord. And the baby is on the woman's chest in exactly the same way as with any other birth. I've had challenge about babies getting cold. Actually, if you dry the baby and then the baby's skin to skin, the baby gets the mother's body heat and it won't get cold. So anytime someone challenges back and asks you why you're doing something or suggests that what you're doing isn't right, you've got to have the answers. You've got to be able to justify why you're making a change. And I've tried to role model this and, as it were, infect our junior doctors. So I've done quite a lot of operations with our junior doctors in this way. And my favourite thing is when one of our junior doctors comes out and says, I did it your way. I gave her the baby. And they're really chuffed with themselves and really pleased that they've seen the response of that woman and how that's made it a really positive experience for her. So now for today's zesty bit. So today's zesty bit is, ask yourself why you're doing something. Challenge yourself. Why? Is it just custom and practice? So I love the quote, the most damaging phrase in the language is, we've always done it this way. We've got that written up above our labour ward board. And I find it very inspiring. So for this episode, I thought I would understand a little bit more about where that came from. And to my joy, I found that a quote by Rear Admiral Grace Murray Hopper, who was a pioneering computer scientist and recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom. So a pretty amazing woman. And when I did a little looking into this, the next bit of the quote is that this is why she has a clock that goes anti-clockwise, which just sounds hilarious. But the point is, we've always done it this way. We've got used to the way of doing this. We've always done this where we hold up the baby in a Simba pose and check, weigh, swaddle. It's more efficient. It's the way we do things. Actually, why? Why is that the way we're doing things? And what could we do differently? And would it be beneficial to do things differently? And how can you go about doing things differently? And I know some people love process and really thinking things through and thinking through guidelines, and that my approach of just doing stuff isn't necessarily the right way, and sometimes you can come a cropper and sometimes it needs a bit more thought. And obviously I also appreciate I'm a consultant, so if I do something a bit differently and encourage others to do it, in general, people are going to go along with me. And it's harder for perhaps our juniors or a more junior midwife or a student midwife has once said to me, how do I challenge this? If people aren't doing what I know you could do, how do I, as a student midwife, raise that? So since I started MatEx, I've had a bit of a mantra. Wrong is wrong, even if everyone's doing it. And right is right, even if no one is doing it. And I think it is difficult to raise these issues. But if someone challenges you, or if someone asks you, why are you doing something this way? Ask yourself, why am I? And what are the alternatives? And would they be safe? And would they be better? And how might I do this? And who might help me do this? And if I don't feel able to say this myself, who else might help me raise this as an issue? So don't just do things in an unquestioning way because that's what you've been told to do. We need to evolve. And I hope by sharing a little bit of my cesarean evolving journey that I will inspire you to think what you're doing in your own maternity unit. Or if you're a woman, what are the things you could perhaps ask for if you're needing to have a cesarean? So that's today's zesty bit. So before I leave today, I'd really love to know via Twitter what other hot topics you'd like me to tackle. My home birth episode seems to have hit a particular spot. Are there other things that people want to hear an obstetric viewpoint about? Don't worry, I've got plenty of ideas, but I just thought I'd put it out there and ask, let me know, tweet me at theobspod and let me know if there are particular things you'd like to hear my thoughts on. So I do hope you've enjoyed listening to the Obs Pod. If you have, do like, subscribe, or leave a review, and join me again to explore more about the life of an NHS obstetrician. I'm finding it really exciting to have people listening and give me feedback about what they've found interesting. So please do recommend the Obs Pod to other friends, colleagues, or people who you think might find it interesting. I'd love it if you'd share with me what you've enjoyed about listening and if you've done anything differently as a result. I can be found on Twitter at FW Maternity and at the Obs Pod. And please do check the MatExp hashtag, hashtag MATEXP, and the website matexp.org.uk for more information and ideas on how to improve women's experience of maternity care. Finally, I'd like to reassure you that I take confidentiality very seriously, and although I'm talking about experiences from my working life, I'm taking great pains to make sure that I anonymise the stories and talk in more general terms so that I keep confidentiality of my women I currently care for and have cared for in the past, very safe. Many thanks for listening.